Okay, good morning, everyone. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody here. It's always a good excuse to give a shiur, but ensure that we have Mendy's and Milty's eggs. That is a great way to begin Thanksgiving morning. Our learning and breakfast this morning is sponsored by Marjorie and Alan Brunner. Thank you, Mendy, for his tireless dedication to bring chizik to all of us. And sponsored by Sylvia and Jules Nachtigal. A special treat to have Sylvia here. Preparing the yahrzeit of Sylvia's mother, Frida Heisler, Rivka Frida Bas Yaakov, whose 10th yahrzeit is Bo Bayom today on Chaf Aleph Kislev. And our learning today is sponsored by Dina and Danny Jarishow and family commemoration of the yahrzeit of Danny's mother, Irene Jarishow, Rachel Leah Bas Nachum, on the Tezayim Kislev. Our learning should be Eboy for their neshamos, Digan Eden Shel Mala. It's great to see everybody. Great way to start a day off, Thanksgiving. And Baruch Hashem, a lot going on in Shomrei Torah this morning. You think it's a day off, but we have learning here at 10 o'clock. There's a father-son football game. No matter what age, just Lincrest School, you can go play by there, by the field. And 10:30, kids and parents are bringing pies to the Fairlawn Police Department at 10:30 this morning. Last year when we did that, they gave us a tour of their holding cells. And we took pictures of our kids in the holding cells, and then some of the parents wanted to run away and leave their kids there for the duration of Thanksgiving. It almost worked, but we chased them down.
10:30.
Okay. So good morning. So we're going to do a little bit of it's Vayeshev, Thanksgiving, and it's really Erev Chanukah. So we'll do a little bit of all. The first piece that we have today is really going to combine all of them. So Rav Druk, who we've been quoting a lot of over the course of the past year, Rav Mordechai Druk, the father, he develops a theme in our parsha where we see the midah of Hakaras HaTov play into several different stories. And he points out the following. Of all places, Yosef is languishing away in Mitzrayim, and he's in the house of Potiphar. And Mrs. Potiphar, is in making advances towards him every single day, numerous times, over and over again. Right? Vayikayom Azeh, it gets to be that day where Yosef is convinced and made up his mind where he's going to give in. Vayavo habaisa lasos malachto, nobody's home. She grabs his clothing, and all of a sudden, Yosef, what does he do? She says, Shichva imi vayazov bigdo biyada. She grabs his clothing. He leaves that with her. Vayonas vayetza chutza. He runs outside. Vayikir osa. And when she saw kizaza bigdo biyada, vayonas achutza. And she notices that he ran outside. So what is going on here in this story? What exactly is happening that he runs outside, he leaves something with her? What exactly is this teaching us? So Sforno writes the following. Vayetze hachutza. Vayanas means he ran away. Vayetze, he left. That is redundant over here, the Sforno points out. Just vayanas hachutza, he ran outside. He ran away, like there was a fire in the house. Why vayanas vayetze? The Sforno writes, Biyoso chutz min acheder, yatza. When he was in the room, he ran out of there like fire. But once he walked out of the house, he walked out normally, as if nothing happened. Now, why did he do that? Bilti tnuat nisa, without any feeling or emotion of that he's running away. He wasn't sweating. He wasn't. Shelo yish'aluhu malach hitanus. So people would not ask him, why are you running out of the house? What happened here? Something must have happened. A witness presumably would see what would happen, which would cause them to question exactly what's going on here. Why is Yosef, the most trusted of people, of servants, of Potiphar's house, running out of the house? Something must have happened. So he walked out normally. Why? Why did he do this? To show Hakaras HaTov to Potiphar. He didn't want people to question why he left. He left on his own volition. He resigned from Potiphar's post as being the head of the house. he didn't want anything to happen to Potiphar and to Ashes Potiphar. That's what Rav Druk expresses here. Because Potiphar took him in. After all, his family left him for dead and sold him eventually, and eventually they ended up in Mitzrayim with nobody to take care of him. And the only person to put a roof over his head was Potiphar. So to express that Hakaras HaTov, even at this very difficult moment in his life, where he has every reason to gather evidence, ma'arer, make points, make accusations, express exactly what happened, he refused to do that because he felt that he owed Hakaras HaTov to Potiphar. Yes. Yes. When the pasuk says Vayavo Habaisa, he went into the house Lasos Melachto to do his work, is euphemistic in terms of what that means. Rashi says it specifically, and then he saw the image of Yaakov, right, in the window, and that's when things changed. Rabbi. The Ramban also expresses a very similar idea as well. Yes.
You have the fact that he did take off all his clothes, that he still had clothes. He left whatever his overcoat, for example.
Right.
Otherwise people would have noticed that. So you have to touch that in.
Right. He must have, yeah, he left that and nothing else. Right. 100%. So Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, then Rav Druk quotes Rav Chaim Shmulevitz earlier on, who was the one that saved Yosef? The Torah says, who saved Yosef? Vayetzel, who was it? Reuven. Reuven ulted first. Reuven said, throw him into a pit, right? That was Reuven's plan. Why Reuven of all the people? Why was that his big plan? Why was it Reuven? So Rav Druk quotes Rav Chaim Shmulevitz is that Yosef, Reuven owes Yosef something. We learned that Reuven was in the doghouse amongst all of Yaakov's children. He was in the doghouse because he did something with Bilha that's very, very unclear exactly what happened, enigmatic, almost by Yishkav, literal languages. He slept with Bilha. The Chazal don't understand it that way, but something happened that put Reuven in a very dark light amongst all the brothers and even with his father. And it was unclear as to Reuven's status, whether he was going to be, did he deserve to be one of the Shvatim? Very unclear. He didn't know if he deserved that anymore. Maybe he lost that right by acting the way that he acted. So Yosef comes back with two dreams. And in each of the dreams, he has he has 11 siblings that are bowing to him. Reuven internalized that it says 11 siblings. Hey, I'm one of those 11. I'm in the family, right? Yosef's prophecy, Yosef's dreams show that I'm in the family. Yosef, and nobody is arguing that point. They're arguing Yosef as the leader, Yosef as the monarch, Yosef as the head, but they're not questioning, and neither is Yaakov, that Reuven is part of the family. So Reuven says, I owe him a Hakaras HaTov, right? He saved me, that I'm now part of the family. I'm back in. And so with that, Rav Chaim Shmulevitz argues that it's Dafka Reuven that saves Yosef. That saves Yosef for that reason. Because that midah of Hakaras HaTov, right? In one way, it's putting a roof overhead and saving one even a little bit. Even when someone wrongs you, or someone's wife in this case wrongs you, we owe them Hakaras HaTov. Secondly here, Reuven to Yosef. Rabbi Soloveitchik points out something very strange in the Rambam. The Rambam is a halachic work. However, when it comes to the Rambam, in Hilchos Chanukah, the Rambam begins Hilchos Chanukah by telling us a story. The Bais Sheni, by the way, the Syrian Greeks were in charge, and they made many different gzeros, many different decrees against the Jewish people and against the religion, etc., etc., etc. But why is that necessary? Why is that necessary? This is not about how do you light the candles, how many candles you need to light, what if you don't have... There are a lot of halachos that Rambam needs to get to. Why all of a sudden? Why does the Rambam go ahead and share the story? So the Rav said that when it comes to the midah of hoda'ah, giving thanks, And he says, really, there are two mitzvot that we reflect upon when it comes to Hanukkah, and that is Hallel, praise, and Hodah, giving thanks to God. So when you give thanks, you need to first know the story, right? You have to know the story before you give thanks. So each year, he thinks we need to be reminded of what exactly happened on Hanukkah. And only after that can you really give an appropriate thank you to a Kaddish Baruch. And with that, and we need to give an appropriate thank you. The final thought in this Hakaras HaTov, Thanksgiving, Hanukkah, Vayeshev thought is a question that I've come back to every year. If you look in Al HaMichya, right, in benching, what happens if you bench on Hanukkah? What do you need to add? Al HaNisim, good. When it comes to Al HaMichya, what do you add special for Hanukkah? Nothing. Chutzpah. Nothing? 8 days. We say full Hallel for 8 days. And now, nothing? Come on. What? So in previous years, we mentioned that answer of Shlomo Zalman Orbach. That, and we dafka, what do we have in Hanukkah? We have donuts. We have mizonos. Donuts, as many donuts as we can eat, any Krispy Kreme donuts you want to eat, you can't bench on them because they're fried. So you're always going to make Al HaMichya. So Shlomo Zalman says that's on purpose. Why? Because you're mentioning the Mizbeach. Chanukas HaMizbeach. We don't mention the Mizbeach in benching, but we mention it in Al HaMichya. So maybe it's a way to mention the Mizbeach. That's good. It's a good answer. That's what Shlomo Zalman's answer. I don't know. He doesn't need my Haskava. Rav Noah Holbaum from Queens. Beautiful answer. He says the nickname for Al HaMichya is Me'ein Shalosh. It is a shortened expression of the first three brachos of Birchas HaMazon. It's a me'ein. It's short. It's brief. It's a summary. When it comes to saying thank you, which is Hanukkah, we can't do it in a brief way. You can't do this in a summarized fashion. Right? And if you're going to do it that way, it's better not to mention. That's what he suggests. Right? That's why similar by modim, when it comes to modim, the chazan says modim, and we say modim derabanan. You can't ask somebody else to say thank you for you. You need to do it yourself. You express that hakaras hatov yourself. So you see how this expression, right, you can't do it in a short way, you have to do it yourself. That's how hakaras hatov works. We see it by Yosef, by Reuven towards Yosef, how the Rambam words, based on the words of the Rebbe Soloveitchik, the Rambam begins, fashions the words in Hilchos Chanukah, and how Al HaMichya, specifically, it is left out. That is thought number one. Continue on with a brilliant drasha from Rabbi Lamb. I don't know when this was written, because it's not, I saw it many years ago in his archives, and then I looked in his archives recently, and I couldn't find it. So I don't know if this is like a censorship thing. I doubt it, but I did not see it then. So, 1 second. Says Rabbi Lamb the following. Yosef had two dreams. What was the first dream about? About wheat. Hine ma'almim alumim, v'hine kama alumasi, etc. We have a Bali Kriya here. They can do a better job. The second dream was about, what was the second dream about? The stars, the sun, and the moon, right? So the first dream, what happened after the first dream? What was the brother's reaction? They said, the first dream created hatred. After the second dream, what was the brother's reaction? Hamaloch timloch aleinu, right? Imashol mashol banu. Sorry, you're right. That's the first. The second dream is, what is this? Vayikanu bo echav, jealousy. First is hatred. Second is jealousy. So Rabbi Lam says the following beautiful thing. He says that the first dream represents our physical prowess, that Yosef was going to be very wealthy in his own right. That is represented by the sheaves of wheat. They were farmers. They were going to, truth is, they were shepherds, but this represents that they were going to be very successful in the financial realm, and they're going to do very well for themselves. And Yosef is going to be prominent over them in this realm. The second way that Yosef was going to be over them, that is represented by the stars, sun, and the moon, that it is spiritual. The heavenly spheres represent spirituality. And two dreams really represent that both of these were going to happen to Klal Yisrael, but specifically to Yosef. Now, Rabbi Lam says, this is really the two miracles of Hanukkah. On Hanukkah, two miracles happened. One was the Neis Melchama that we overcame, Rabim Biad Me'atim. And the second one is Tmeim Biad Tahorim, spirituality. Reflected Neis Melchama and Neis Pach Shemen. Neis Melchama is the physical war, and the Neis of the oil is the Neis of spirituality. The Beis HaMikdash, the oil, the menorah, Torah. So he says, what's amazing is, in both of these stories, you would argue that what should come first, spirituality, and then physicality. Is that how it works? He says, for whatever reason, Kadosh Baruch Hu, the way Kadosh Baruch Hu worked it out, is that first, you have the physical, and then you have the spiritual. And the way the Maharal writes it is that Hashem needed to give them the second miracle. The first miracle warranted a holiday on its own, but without the miracle of the Neis Pach Shemen, we would think that maybe it's, I did it on my own, right? It was our strategies and our strength and it was us. It wasn't God that did it. So Hashem needed to make the second miracle. So he writes that when it comes to us, klape, the nations of the world, physical strength, brute strength, winning wars over other nations that are much stronger than us, that creates hatred. They hate us. How'd you win? We had so many more armies than you. And he was writing specifically about 1948. Right? That, how can, 1967, how can it happen? How did it happen? So that creates a relationship of sinna between us and the other nations. But when does it get really, yes? There's a reason. Right. So in our case, it's not just that we had the war, but it's that we recovered. And look at our nation now, startup nation. Look at Israel now. Look what we have. We're not just an Or LaGoyim in terms of education. How many different products do we use every single day that are due to this little tiny little country in the middle of the Mideast? It's called Israel. That's sinna. Right? That's sinna. The second level, and Rabbi Lam says, we can't have one without the other. Rabbi Lam was writing this, I think, in the 60s, and almost prophetic, because he says that if we just win the wars, and we're just, you know, it's our military strength alone, it's not going to be good for the state of Israel. Right? If we just had the Neis Melchama without the second miracle, different than the Maharal, then what's that going to say for the people moving forward? How is that going to develop? We need, right, Torah. We need spirituality. That's part of, not just part of, that is our destiny. We need more yeshivos, more learning, more Yiddishkeit. More. We need more and more and more. Without that, then the first part wipes away. The first part is unnecessary. It won't be a miracle that's going to be long-lasting. It's going to not going to be staked. The argument that's going to be long-lasting, if we don't have part two, we don't have part two of the miracle of that dream of the vision of Yosef. And he says this model falls throughout history. We can have Neis Melchama, we can have part one, we can have Me'alamim Alumim, we can be, you know, become extremely wealthy and powerful in that realm, but without the spiritual strength and vigor and vitality of the Jewish people, then forget about the first. We always need both. And that is reflected in the two miracles of Hanukkah, That's really reflected in the two dreams that Yosef expressed over here. That is thought number two. What? And we need, right? And it, but also it adds to it. Without, after 1967, if nothing happens, right? If there were not, look what happened after 1967. I've read two or three books over the past year just about the Kiruv movement that took place in the 1970s, right? That's really started then. The Baal Tshuva Kiruv movement started in the late 60s, early 70s, because people saw what was happening. That led to a tremendous revitalization of more Torah being learned in Eretz Israel, more people searching and yearning for something greater. And it wasn't that they wanted to, and they should, right, join the army. It was that they felt like, we need to connect to this. We need to learn more. We need to connect more, which is amazing. That how those two things really work together post 1967. Next thought comes from Rabbi Sacks, Chief Lord Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, that's out, right, the following beautiful idea. It's really one of his themes in general. Rabbi Sacks writes, there's a machlokas in the Gemara regarding Neros Chanukah between Rav and Shmuel. Can you take one candle Chanukah and light to the next candle Chanukah? So we don't do this. That doesn't mean we don't pass. We pass it that way. The machlokas is Rav in the Gemara says, Ema dik miner liner. You can't light from one candle to the next. And Shmuel says, you can light from one candle to the next. Practically, we paskin that we don't. Nonetheless, we do. Sorry, we paskin we do. The Ramas is practically, we have a shamish, we should use that instead. We should use a different candle because candles might go out, might cause it to burn faster. So we don't do it. But this concept does apply, madlikin mi ner l'ner. And he says, what is the basis of this dispute, this machlokas, between Rav and Shmuel over here? So he says that Rav argues that why can't I light from one candle to another? Because I am machish mitzvah. By lighting from one to the other, I am diminishing my mitzvah on two levels. Number one is practically, you might diminish it by lighting from one to the other. The candles might burn quicker, but it also might not look nice when one candle is lowering itself to light the other one. And Rabbi Sacks says Shmuel disagrees. Shmuel disagrees because ultimately he argues that when it comes to what does the Hanukkah candles represent? They represent a Jewish neshama. And when one Jewish neshama is trying to light another Jewish neshama and go down to where they are, bend down to get to them and to light them up, then it's never a machish mitzvah. It never diminishes the stature of the other one. Rabbi Sacks writes, he talks about power versus influence, right? Moshe Rabbeinu gave over his part of his nevuah to the Sanhedrin at the end of Parashas Balosra. And it was questioned, not by him, but by others, whether Moshe is going to lose his koach, his spiritual stature. And what was the mashal that Rashi gives? If I take one candle and use that candle to light 70 candles, does that one candle go out? No. So he says that is influence. When it comes to Torah, and we're looking to inspire others, your candle is still burning, and you have the ability to influence others in your sphere. It doesn't take away from you, but you're able to use your koach to influence other people. That's his line that he used to say all the time, that great leaders create leaders. Good leaders create followers. Yes? Yeah. Yeah. So to add to this is that candle, one's candle needs to be strong. if one's candle is not yet firmly placed in the holder, you know how like it's by day four, there's so much wax buildup and you have to like take that knife and dig it out. And then you're like, you broke the thing and so much pressure because you got to like handle it right this moment. And you should have done this earlier in the day. But if your candle is not strong in that place, then you're right. Then you're right. Then maybe that person, that candle should not be lighting other candles yet. You got to be firmly placed in, you know, in the holder, and then one can move on to others.
Rabbi,
yes, Nathan.
It could be considered that one candle could be the teacher, and he's lighting a flame in other person's spirituality.
Yes, 100%. That's there. Yeah, that's Nathan. Correct. That's what we are saying. We are saying that. Yeah, correct. Truth is that what are the three parts of a candle that we light, or even of an oil? There's the wick, the oil, and the whole thing together. It's called an air. What is a wick in Hebrew?
Teal.
And what is oil in Hebrew? Shemen. And there is an air, a candle. So nun is ner, teal is pei, and shin is shemen, a nefesh. Right? Nefesh. Ner, psil, shemen. That's what we're lighting. We're not just lighting the candles of Hanukkah. It's to light up our soul. To light up our soul. The last thought is something really brilliant that is going to give us food for thought about the story of Yosef and the coat. And I want to frame this. Truth is, we can give this a whole nother discussion. But Rav Schlesinger, Elio Schlesinger was a Rav in Gilo, a great darshan. He has different sets of svarim on Chumash and the Moadim. This one's called Eila Dvarim. And he asks the following question. He says, if Yosef was married at the time of his being thrown into the pit and being sent away, would there be enough evidence with the bloody coat that his wife could remarry? If Yosef was not married, but if Yosef was married at this time, would his wife end up being an aguna because there's not enough proof, or is there enough proof? So he goes through a whole lamdus, and maybe a different time we'll discuss, is this considered a simen mufak? You need a good simen, this bloody coat, or not? But he argues and puts a wrench into the entire thing, right? Is Yosef, because what the coat, was that coat Yosef's? There's no DNA. All right, okay, good. DNA testing was not used. The first time it was used in halacha was in 2001, 9/11. That was the first time it was used. So DNA testing was not available then. But we have, right, the ketones pasim was dipped in blood that belonged to Yosef. So that enough of a proof. Yeah. Because you're ruining two lives. Because you're ruining more lives.
Yeah.
Okay. They ruined Yaakov's life too. But I hear you. Okay. I hear you. So Rev Schlesinger argues that it's not a question because of the following. Notice, and you got to be so sensitive to the text of the Torah, that sometimes the Torah uses the word ketones, and sometimes the Torah uses the word ketones pasim. So why is that? And I want to we'll highlight this over here. So Vayikasher ba Yosef elacha, when Yosef comes towards his brothers, listen to the pasuk. Vayefshitu es Yosef es kutanto. They removed his tunic. Es ktones apasim asher alav. And of the unclear ketones pasim that was on him. What does that mean? So says Rashi, es kuntanto zechaluk, that was his undergarment, his coat, shirt. Es ketones pasim hu shehosif lo aviv yoser alachav. Every brother had one ketonis, had one normal tunic that they all wore. Yosef got one extra. That's like a bechor pishnayim, right? That's why the brothers. He had a ketones and a ketones pasim. He had two. They weren't jealous over the ketones because they all got a ketones. They were jealous over the ketones pasim that he received, which is mentioned in the very beginning of our parsha, va'asalo ketones pasim, that Yaakov made for him a ketones pasim. So they removed both from here. They threw him into the pit. He was sold. Who sold him? It's a very good question. It's not clear who sold him. Now, they come back in Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Vayichu et Ketones Yosef. They took the Ketones of Yosef, Vayishchatu Sirizim, they slaughtered a goat, Vayitbulu et Ketones Badam, and they dipped the Ketones into the blood. What Ketones did they dip into blood? So Schlesinger argues, it's not the Ketones Pasim. They dipped Yosef's regular tunic into blood. Now, why would they do that? Why would they not dip the Ketones Pasim into blood? So he, what? Seemingly. So he wants to argue that that would bring up too much suspicion. If they brought back the bloody Ketones Pasim, Yaakov would be like, come on. I know that you guys hate him because of this ketones pasim. I'm only using the word hate because that's the Torah using that word. He would be very suspicious. Now listen to the next pasuk because this is unbelievable. One second, Mendy. Vayishalchu, it's ketones habasim, vayaviyu el avihem. Funny words. Vayishalchu, they sent the ketones pasim and they brought it to their father. Vayomru, and they said, Zos matzanu, this we found this. Hakerna, haketones bincha, hi imlo. And they said, we found this. Is this, right, your son's ketones or not? If it's a ketones pasim, of course it's his. It's one of a kind. It's unique. So the Rashbam, but beginning of the Pasuk says, Vayishalchu es ketones pasim. So the Rashbam and others argue here that Vayishalchu, which is what I just quoted inside, the Chizkuni says, they gave it to other people on the road who didn't know them. And he said, by the way, you found this like this ketones pasim. I think it belongs to Jacob. You mind bringing it back to him? And the Rishvam is something very similar. Vishalchu. They made sure it was sent to somebody else and they sent it back. So now what happens? The brothers come home. What do they have? They have a bloody tunic that looks like all their other tunics. It's a random one. It's like just a regular shirt. And then at the same time, or maybe a day or two later or a day or two earlier, someone comes in and sends in Yosef's ketones pasim. So now Yaakov is getting nervous, right? So they come in with a bloody one and other message. Presuming this was found on the road somewhere, some way. So Vayikira Vayomer Ketones Bini. Yaakov is the one that puts pieces together. This must be the Ketones of my son. Chayara Achasahu. It must be that an animal, you know, mauled him. Tarof Taraf Yosef. Yosef must have been killed. Right? So the brothers Pim is a little bit more conniving in a certain way than we usually think of this, right? And this is just a closer reading of the text, gives us a very different understanding of what was going on in the story. Yeah.
If you were both of these at the same time, both times, so the blood, first of all, I would I'm not sure. I'm going to get the doctor to ask him to tell us. The one on top, who gets the blood? Who should get his own blood? The one that's on the top or the one that's underneath? If it's the underneath one.
Yeah.
He has had to cover and he wanted the products.
Right. So there's definitely doubts here as to exactly what happens, which is what Rav Schlesinger argues is that you wouldn't have enough proof for and to be Matir and Aguna in this case, in this Yosef scenario, because he says, what do you have? What's your proof? You have a dirty but not a bloody tonus passim that exclusively belonged to Yosef. And then you have a arbitrary random, bloody shirt, right? That could belong to anybody. I'm sure it wasn't like a Jewish thing. They went to whatever store in the mall on Black Friday and purchased, shirts on sale. So Yaak was buying clothing for 12 kids. I have 5 daughters. I know how that is. It's a lot of clothing. Yeah.
Another problem. Rashi says, Eskutanto, that's the chaluk.
Yeah.
And the order is wrong. Because first Yosef is wearing from the outside in, he's wearing the ksonas pasim.
Interesting, yeah.
That. So this is the wrong order. They would first have him remove the ksonas pasim. And so it's not the pashup shot reading. Rashi's not the pashup.
Right, it's Kasha and Rashi. Great question. Just in the order itself. If a lion is chasing Yosef or anybody, try to remove layers because you feel like that's going to weigh you down a little bit. So I imagine that's probably the thought process in Yaakov's mind. And maybe this goes back to, right, I was doing homework the other night, and Rashi quotes, Vayima'im Nisachim, that Yaakov he couldn't get Nechama from Yosef. It always bothered him. There's a certain sense of closure psychologically that happens over time, and Yaakov couldn't get there. And maybe there was, at the same time where he maybe put things together, it still was very unclear as to what was going on. And this is maybe what he struggled with, that he refused, because maybe there were, not that there was hope, but it was just so confusing as to what was happening in this scenario and what really went down. So food for thought over here. Yes. That's true also. And think about 9/11 and how helpful that was. Another Mar Malcolm. The first time Ramosha Feinstein passed in the case like this of Agunos was a case of one of my closest friends' grandfathers. He was on an airplane. He was a businessman. He traveled very, very often for work. And the plane, almost like I think 10 minutes into the few minutes into the ride, it crashed. Everybody died on the plane. And what proof do you need? He was married. His mother was, I think, 3 years old at the time. Thank God she got married, remarried again, had a step-grandfather that was his grandfather, took care of him really well. He just passed away a year and a half ago, very special man. And so there's a manifest, but a manifest is not enough because people, especially back then, could miss their flights. And the manifests were not changed in real time. So what was it? So there's one thing that he always brought with him on every business trip, and that was a special briefcase with his monogram on it. It was a monogram briefcase that had his name on it. And Ramosha said that was enough. That was a siman mivhak that they found it on the water. And that was a siman mivhak that he was, unfortunately part of that. And it's a cool question regarding Shiva and Avelis and things like that, very, very challenging, which came up during 9/11 as well. But this changes the perspective in terms of the Yosef story. What were the brothers doing? How careful were they or not careful in presenting this to Yaakov? I think it just, every year we need to look at this in a different way and find new pieces of information and learn the Torah. In different perspectives. I think this is something fascinating for today. Just to review. First of all, thank you again for coming. taking time out of your Thanksgiving to come learn Torah together. Yisher koach to Mendy, Milton, everybody for putting this together. And thank you to our sponsors. So we first began with a piece on Hakaras HaTov. Rav Druk saw Hakaras HaTov as a theme in our Parsha. First by Yosef, not running away when he left the home of Potiphar. And second by Reuven, saving Yosef's life, which we connected to Rabbi Salvechik's interpretation of the beginning of the Rambam in Hilchos Chanukah, which is the historical analysis and why that was necessary. And we also connected that to why there's no Alam Michya in the story. Rabbi Lam pointed out and saw a parallel between Yosef's dreams, the dream of physical success and spiritual success, and it connects to modern day Israel and also to the story of Chanukah, that you need both together. One without the other is not valid. We need both, especially when it comes to the state of Israel. And third, we moved on to Emadlik Mineir Lener, the Machlokis and the Gemara between Rav Shmuel and Rabbi Sachs's understanding of this and what we are lighting on Hanukkah, not just we're lighting the candles, but we're lighting up our neshamos and Bezrat Hashem neshamos of many other people, people that, you know, need their neshamos to be lit up. And fourth, for today, we mentioned the thought of Rav Schlesinger in his interpretation of the story of Yosef and the brothers. One ketones, two ketonos, ketones, ketones pasim, and how that plays into the ruse that they presented to Yaakov and maybe crept doubt and slash Yaakov putting pieces together made things a lot more murkier and confusing as things went on. Wish everybody a great Shabbos and have a wonderful day. Spend time with your family and a great Thanksgiving. Ah.